Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Monday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Coach Jen, coming to you from the Ice Pack Department of the Horse Radio Network Studios. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for October 7th, episode 760, brought to you today by Omega Alpha Equine. Good morning, Horse World.
Yep, it's Monday.
All right, let's take it from the top again.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us here at Horses in the Morning on this fine Monday morning here in the United States. And Jamie is off today. She's off visiting her in-laws in the center part of the country. And she joked that she was heading to tornado country. Little did she know that they would be having tornadoes all over the center part of the country this weekend. So I know
she's safe
there.
It's not really tornado season, is it?
I know. No, not quite yet. Or no, it should have ended a while back. But it's not also blizzard season, and that happened too. So we'll talk a little bit more about that as the show goes on. But first, Jennifer, you said it's ice pack territory. I assume that is from the hunter pace that you went on with Dr. Wendy of the driving radio show yesterday.
Yes, it is. We had a fantastic time at the South Creek Foxhounds hunter pace event yesterday. And it just dawned on me this morning that approximately 20 years ago this week, I hung up my competitive hat. And yesterday, it was very exciting when I looked at the scores at the end of the day. We came in second place. We had the second fastest time of the day at the South Creek Foxhounds Hunter Pace event.
And was Wendy riding or driving?
We were both riding. The only problem is we had the second fastest time, but we entered the wrong class. We were in the optimum time class. So we did not get a ribbon to show for our efforts.
You came in a little ahead of schedule, did you?
We were just having a little too much fun. We got out there and started galloping around and going, "Oh, this is fun."
Now, I did post on Facebook, there's a picture of that Wendy sent over to me, of you holding up a can of beer. Now, I know you don't like beer. Was Beaker drinking on the way? Or?
Yes, that was for Beaker. Actually, part of the hunter pace, part of the thing is you always have a what they call a mandatory stirrup or mandatory stop. At this particular hunter pace event, it was unmanned. So they just put the cooler there, and you could reach over aboard your horse and grab a beer. And I was fishing around in there, and I thought I saw a Diet Coke in the bottom, and I picked it up and said, "Wait a minute, this is a Coors Light." I did not drink the Coors Light, no.
Okay. Yeah, you don't even like beer. So how was the ride? You said it was. You even got to go through some swamps and saw some wildlife, according to Wendy's post, alligators, snakes, and other furry critters.
Oh, my, yes. The Hunter Pace was held at a ranch where it's a wildlife ranch. There's all kinds of critters out there. So there are evidence of wild hogs. We definitely saw a really big fat snake on about the second swamp we went through. And we had several swamps, one of which came right up to Beaker's elbows. Beaker is only about 15 hands, so that doesn't take much. And I discovered that zippered boots, for all of their convenience, are pretty worthless when you go through deep water. My feet were so.
Yeah, they don't say waterproof zippered boots.
No, it goes right through those zippers. Absolutely, right through. So I squished the rest of the way around. But the footing was actually fantastic. The swampy sections were very much get into the swamp and get right back out versus the entire property, which is sometimes the case. The vast majority of the course was actually access roads, which are sand. So Beaker being barefoot did just fine, and we had a great time. Lots and lots and lots of little tiny jumps to jump over. So Beaker and Alfie both had a high old time jumping little tiny logs, as did Wendy and I.
Now, I one warning, if anybody's ever coming down to Florida and is going to do a Hunter Pace, we will give you, especially this time of year, from about July through October, if you do not want to go in the first group out, avoid that at all costs. Never go in the first group out when you're in Florida riding through the woods, because we have the problem of a little thing called banana spiders down here. And yes, they're little yellow spiders, but they're little yellow spiders that make the stickiest webs you've ever seen, and they like making it from tree to tree across paths. And yes, if you're the first one out, you are going to have a face full of banana spiders the entire ride. I mean, they're awful. Walking from here to the barn, we get covered in spider webs every day. So you guys were toward the end. You didn't have that problem, right?
Yes, we went out late in the day. A Hunter Pace, you don't have a set time to ride a lot of times. You kind of sign up when you get there and then leave when you want. So it's a very relaxed atmosphere. And we didn't go out till about the second hour or so. So all those other crazy young folk on their fancy event horses took out all the cobwebs for us. It was pretty awesome.
And then you also did say, too, that there were a lot of Western riders that came out.
Yes, and that's something interesting about the South Creek Foxhounds in particular, is they really make it accessible to anybody who wants to ride across country. They have divisions for Western riders, and I saw a lot of Western riders and a lot of endurance riders there. They even have a carriage division if you want to drive. And then, of course, they have the more traditional English over fences or English on the flat. And on the flat class, you can either jump or not. It's just optional. But something else interesting about the Hunter Pace is it's all done on the honor system. There are no jump judges or any other sorts of judges, for that matter. And there are flags set around the course to go through. And if you're in the jumping class, it's up to you to jump all the jumps, because there's no judge there to see if you really do it the first time around. But there's also nobody to see you when you fall off, get left behind, land in a heap, hang a knee, or anything else, all of which I did. Yeah. There's nobody there
off
to see except Wendy with her video phone.
Yeah. I don't know how she takes pictures and post them to Facebook while you guys were on the ride galloping around. She's good. She's
well, we
good.
Were walking while she posted. We would stop and
okay.
walk at,
right.
at long enough to post, but then we were right back in a mad gallop again.
Didn't anybody tell Wendy that texting and driving is dangerous?
No, driving, no. Riding, we're okay.
She does that a lot, texting and driving, too.
Yeah, call her out. Go ahead.
I know. I did. I am. I call her out every time she does it. Well, I'm glad you guys had a good time down there. You know, Hunter Paces are fun. And, you know, maybe for those that don't know, just give everybody the Reader's Digest a version of what a Hunter Pace is, in case somebody hasn't been on one.
Hunter Paces are a semi-casual form of riding competition, generally sponsored and put on by fox hunting groups. And it's a way for people who fox hunt to go out and run and jump and play cross country during the off season when there's no fox hunting happening. They are generally open to the public, very inexpensive. It's about the cheapest way to earn a ribbon you can do in the horse show business nowadays. And it is a open country course set, and they're generally between 5 and 10 miles, depending on the fox hunt. They are timed, and most hunter paces have two different types of classes. Fastest, which is literally go as fast as you can, and optimum time. Nobody knows what the optimum time. They write that on a piece of paper and put it inside of the Master Foxhound's boot. So nobody knows what it is. The idea being that you ride the entire course at what you personally judge to be a fair hunting pace. And the group or team, because you always do it in teams, who comes closest to that time, either above or below, wins first prize, and et cetera, down the line. And then generally speaking, there is a barbecue, a party, or a picnic afterwards, because it is fox hunting after all.
Right. That's when they open up the serious booze. The bourbon comes out then.
Yes.
And did you put your typical peanut butter and jelly in your sandwich case and lemonade in your flask?
I did have my traditional peanut butter and jelly on homemade bread. Thank you very much. And I had my official Diet Dr. Pepper along with it afterwards. And Beaker had his horse quencher afterwards, so everybody was happy. Yeah.
Yeah, all the years of hunting Jennifer did, she never put booze in her flask. It was always lemonade.
You know, there were always plenty of other folks out there with flasks to share.
That's true.
And
all right,
and
very
in,
good.
The, in our picture in our picture there on the Facebook page, that is one giant flask to share sitting on that tree stump.
There. You can tell that picture's a good one to tell what kind of country you were riding through. It's pretty, that's what rural Florida looks like if you're in the woods.
Yes.
Tell us what's coming up on today's show.
On today's Omega Alpha Monday edition, joining us from the road, Dale Samantin, who was one of the stars of the Retired Racehorse Training Project that wowed the crowds at Pimlico Racecourse in Baltimore this weekend, is going to be calling us, or us calling him, from the road. He is on his way back to get this South Dakota from Baltimore, so I suspect he is going to intentionally delay his arrival. And next up, Dr. Gordon Chang from Omega Alpha Equine itself is here for a descrambling of bone, joint, and ligament health for our horses and setting the tone for the remainder of the week. The Wacky World of Horses with Wiley is here with the latest last track provided by Horse Nation. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Yeah, and I have a bunch of news from the weekend, too, all different kinds of stuff, a variety of news from the weekend. First, you know, I would be remiss if Jamie was here. She'd want to cover the racing news first, so let's do that. And, of course, one of her favorite horses is Wise.
Hey.
Yeah?
Aren't we going to do our daily whinnies?
Oh, yes. Yes, we are. I almost forgot. Sorry. I went on with the show already. Well, my daily whinny goes out to Reese Kostler Stanfield, host of the Dressage Radio Show, and her husband, Travis, because it is their...
Oh, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary. Pour a cheerful toast and fill it, happy anniversary. But be careful you don't spill it, happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary to Reese and Travis. It's their 7th year anniversary. And we knew them long before she became host of the Dressage Radio Show. So fun. We got to spend a lot of time with them when we lived in Lexington, and they're just a lot of fun to be with. And I can see why they're together. They're perfect for each other. He's the perfect horse husband to her horsiness. So, and he's a geek too. He's a bigger geek than me, actually.
Oh yeah, he's much bigger.
He's a serious geek. He actually gets paid to be a geek. That's the difference.
You're a volunteer.
He makes
geek.
Money. Yeah, he makes money doing it. Your turn.
And my daily whinny goes out to Dr. Wendy Ying, who over the weekend was my one-woman cheering section at the Hunter Pace. We had a great time, and Wendy was so much fun to ride with because I'm just some Yahoo out there riding on my Yahoo trail horse. And over every tiny little log that we leaped over, and I'm glad she only took one video because it was pretty hilarious to watch Beaker and I jumping over those things. She cheered me on. And we had a great time, and I cheered her on when her crazy Frisian pony hopped over little tiny jumps. So thanks, Wendy.
She is a ton of fun to do stuff with, because she has a good time doing anything she does. So it doesn't matter what it is. She just has a good time doing it. I'm glad you guys had fun. Well, tomorrow is our monthly endurance day, and it is with Karen Chatton, who is a professional endurance rider from the West Coast. She will be on at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And I got to tell you that the Endurance Day for the last, we've had two of them so far, two monthly Endurance Days here on Horses in the Morning, and it has been the most listened to single episode of the last 2 months are the Endurance Days. Each time it has been the most listened to episode each month. So if you haven't listened to Endurance Day yet, you should. She has guests tomorrow. She has one of the legends. We actually did her on Equestrian Legends, our radio show about Equestrian Legends. She has an 89-year-old woman who is still riding endurance and who is the legend of endurance riding, and also a 9-year-old. So we've guests from 9 to 89. And this 9-year-old has already put in 650 miles this year in endurance riding. Was doing another 50-miler yesterday, so she's probably up to 700 miles now. And so we're going to speak to 9-year-olds to 90-year-olds. She's going to have tips for you on endurance riding and some product suggestions and all kinds of things. So if you haven't had a chance, even if you're not interested in endurance, it is a wonderful day. And as I said, gets the most downloads of any episode we do all month long. So it's worth checking out. Before we get into our first guest, and Jennifer's lining up now, I wanted to mention that our thoughts are out to everybody in South Dakota who had the worst storm, the worst early tornado or blizzard, actually, in the history of that state. They had 2 to 3 feet of snow with 60-mile-an-hour winds. There are, the sad part of that is they hadn't brought the cattle in from the plains yet. They hadn't brought them in from the back 40, so to speak. And a lot, they lost a lot of livestock in that storm. Apparently the cattle got stuck and just in the drifts and things and were killed. So there were lots of drivers. Roads were shut down everywhere. They were rescued. They rescued at least 80 people by snowmobile. They found cars that were buried 2 to 3 feet above the roofs in places. So it is, there's lots of power out, that kind of thing. Of course, it's very rural out there. And they declared a state of emergency, so that's what's going on there. There were tornadoes south of that. But the big story, I think, was the blizzard, early blizzard in South Dakota, something that they were not counting on this early, and it never really comes this early. So our best out there. I know there were horse people out there and probably some listeners of ours out that way. So if you have power, we're wishing you the very best in South Dakota. In Wyoming, too, also. Well, Jennifer, you have our first guest on the line.
I do. With us right now, live from Baltimore, Maryland, where it is not snowing, Dale Samantin from Horse Creek Thoroughbreds in Newell, South Dakota, who is busily packing up their rig to make the 4-day trip back to the Dakotas, is Dale. Welcome to the show, Dale.
Well, thank you.
Now,
how are you this morning?
We're fantastic. I imagine that you and Team Duck are pretty well exhausted, though.
Well, we are getting there, but it's too early to quit yet.
Too early to quit yet. Who is going to take the first driving shift when you pull out?
My nephew, Guy.
There you go. Good for him.
He knows how to read this tom-tom.
Hey, smart man. So for folks who have been living under a rock for the past 3 months and don't understand what's going on here, tell our listeners just a little bit about the retired racehorses symposium that you guys were at this past weekend at Pimlico Racecourse in Maryland.
Okay. Well, it wasn't really a competition. It was a 100-day challenge to basically to take up a thoroughbred that has been raced and retired, take them off the track and train them and show people what you can do with them in 100 days. And then there were some horses that dropped out or couldn't make it, so our RTP contacted us and asked if we could bring another horse or something to help fill that slot. And we said, well, if you could find some cattle for us, I could bring a whole trailer load of horses. And So we cooked up this idea to have this jockey challenge. We had three retired jockeys. Chris McCarron was one of them. Andrea Siegfeld and Jenny, I guess I can't remember her last name, a beautiful lady that retired, I believe, in like 90, in the 90s. But anyway, they, and then there was a jump jockey, Gus Brown, and they rode my horses, and there was a barrel racer in the team sorting, and her and I partnered up, and I don't know if we got first or second or third, or I don't know who won it, but we didn't.
A good time was had by all then.
We had a blast. I made a little tiny set of stirrups for Chris McCarron to hang on his saddle horn.
so he could cut cattle with his jockey-length stirrups.
So he could reach the stirrups. He's got pretty short legs. It was a really an honor to meet Chris in person. I was a fan of his for years. And I guess we had a lot of fun. We did a rope and demonstration, my nephew and I, and had a cow get underneath my horse, and he kind of blew up and bucked a little bit. People didn't realize what a fiasco it was turning out to be, but they thought that's what we were trying to do.
I was going to say, that makes it exciting for the audience when stuff like that
happens. Yeah, they loved it. They loved it.
Do it again.
He didn't get me bucked off, so everybody was happy.
So now, did you what was your experience with the thoroughbreds you had to work with? Did you end up with some good ones?
Some of them I've ridden for, two of them that I brought I'd ridden for years. They were really nice horses. And then I brought two more that were really green, a big two-punch gelding, that, and I think this was six rides for him since he left the racetrack, and we had him working cattle. And I had another one that was maybe 10 rides, and that was one of the things I wanted to show. Duck was probably the toughest customer of the bunch when as far as retraining. He wasn't really willing. He he's as good as a horse can be right now, but he came around a little harder. He's like the really intelligent kid in class that always asks why. You try to show him something. He had to have a reason.
Are you saying that Duck was an obnoxious brat, Dale? Is that what you're saying?
No, he was for a while. And then we had a two-punch gelding here that Chris McCarron rode, and I kind of wanted to show that I there's no real body type preference. There's no pedigree preference. These horses will, just about all of them will figure it out if you take the time and work with them. If these trainers will just leave them on their feet, quit while they're still sound enough to make a living, we can do something with them.
Now, did all the jockeys stay on board?
Yeah, they did. They did. They didn't know much about cattle, but they sure know how to ride a horse. It would be nice to get some kind of a school going like Chris has to teach people to ride or handle horses, if we could get a school going to teach people how to retrain these horses.
Tell us about some of the other trainers that you got to see there. What were they doing? What kinds of things were they doing with this herd that they had trained for?
Well, there was a polo trainer that I've kind of watched some of that, so it wasn't really new to me. But there was a lady training a police horse, That was really interesting. The things they use those horses for, it's basically natural for a horse. You know, like they've trained these horses to, two of them, to push up against an assailant or a bad guy or whatever. They smash him up between two horses. And I don't know if you've ever loaded a horse in a trailer and then tried to walk past him to get out of it. He'll mash you against the wall. So it's kind of natural for him. But that was interesting to watch. And the dress, just some of these trainers, boy, they can really get a lot out of a horse. All of this stuff is interesting for me, but horse interesting.
So now, I know that they had a bunch of it. Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
Go ahead, Glenn.
They had a bunch of venters there, I know. So I assume there was some jumping going on and things like that as well.
Yeah. Well, there was an eventer that was pretty interested in buying duck, and that's kind of where I'd like to see him go. I think he'd be a top notch eventer.
And he's famous already.
He is kind of famous. He deserves to be. He's quite a horse. He's a thinker. My dog runs out away from the house in the morning looking to see trying to figure out which pickup I'm taking, or the car or the tractor or whatever. And Duck does the same thing when I lead him out of the barn. He wants to go first and try to figure out where we're going.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
He's a thinker, and there's not many horses like that. And that's why he was so tough to train.
Yeah, so we can look forward to Duck making headlines in the future as well, then.
I think he will somewhere, and that's what I'm more interested in as far as selling him is. It's not how much I get for him, but where he goes and what he's going to do.
Something really cool. So this was the first year that Stuart Pittman over there at the Retired Racehorse Training Project did this symposium. Do you think it'll be back again next year? It sounds like it was pretty successful.
Well, I believe it will. They're going to have a meeting later this morning. I'm going to miss it. But Dorothy and Heather are both going to stay here, go to the meeting, and then they're going to fly home and leave us with the horses. So.
Of course they will. Yeah. Thanks, Heather.
Yeah. Well, Heather has been an invaluable. You just can't believe that. What Heather can get done. She's a marketing genius, and I think she's going to be on board with Stuart for this thing next year. So.
Well, I know for one, I am certainly looking forward to it making a return again next year, because all sorts of interesting, fascinating stuff that they were doing with these retired off-the-track horses. Great variety. It's great for us horse people, but it was also great entertainment for the public at large, which is what we really need for these thoroughbreds. So thank you so much for stopping by and spending 15 minutes with us this morning, Dale, because I know you guys are packing furiously and all running on empty after your busy weekend. So have a safe trip back to the Dakotas. And hopefully we will be talking to you again soon when you choose next year's training project.
Well, I've got two that are here that I think are still eligible. They've had less than 15 rides since they left the racetrack. I could take them home and turn them out for the winter. I'm willing to be on board if they'll have me. This has been a lot of fun, and I hope we did horses some good, because they're the ones that really need this.
Yeah, before you go, you picked a good weekend to go away. Is your home under 3 feet of snow right now?
Yes, we're not sure what it looks like. I guess there's no branches left on any trees, and there's a lot of dead livestock. Wind blew them out of the country, and so I've got a lot of work to do when I get home to start helping people find their livestock. It doesn't do much good to find the dead ones, but
Now, I just covered this a little bit. I was talking about it a little bit before you came on the air. This is very, very unusual, isn't it, to have this early a snowstorm like this?
Well, it's not unusual to have the storm. It's unusual to have one that bad.
Yeah.
We get one a storm every year in October. It just kind of wakes you up and reminds you what you didn't get done. it's rare, extremely rare to have one this early, this bad.
And the livestock thing, I know there's probably some listeners wondering why did so many livestock die in this particular storm? Were they normally not out in the pastures they were in, or in the, you know, grazing where they were grazing? What was the drifts too high? What was the situation?
Well, the wind blows so hard, 60, 70 mile an hour wind, and it blows so hard they leave their shelter and go with the wind. And a lot of them, if you see it, they got a lot of rain before the snow, and it soaks them and chills them, and they don't have any winter hair on yet, so it just chills them down, and they finally die from hypothermia. Some of the roads are closed with dead livestock on the highways, and it's not a pretty situation. People had, you know, they're all trying to get geared up to get their lives, their calves sold this time of year, and this hit them before they could even get them gathered.
Well, our thoughts and prayers are to you and all of your neighbors out there in South Dakota.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it.
And you have a safe trip back, okay? Thanks for being on, Dale.
You bet.
All right. Bye-bye. Wow, what a situation for him to be out here and have that happening back there, you know?
Yeah.
Had to have been tough for him, too. I didn't mean to be a Debbie Downer there at the end, but I thought, you know, I just talked about the South Dakota thing, and I knew he was from there. So.
Yeah.
But it sounds like their event went very well. Did it say, were there a lot of people there watching?
I think they had a pretty good turnout. I didn't have a chance to watch it. They had a live stream on HRTV.com. And I didn't have a chance to watch it because I was busily galloping around Dade City, Florida. But the pictures I've seen, the still shots I've seen, they had a good turnout at the indoor clinics and such. So I'm assuming that the outdoor stuff was just as popular. And I've seen pictures. They actually did it on the racetrack. I thought they were going to do it on the infield. They were actually on the track surface. And there was a young gal there who's a Grand Prix show jumper, has an OTTB that's on the Grand Prix circuit. She came and did a demo. It was really, really cool. So kudos to the group over there. I'm looking forward to it to coming back again next year. Within 5 years, it will be selling out crowds just like the Mustang Makeover does.
Very good. Well, while you're getting our next guest on the line, we're going to take a break for our first commercial of the day with Fleeceworks. And we'll be right back with Dr. Chang, president of Omega Alpha Equine, with his nutrition segment that he does with us once a month.
Fleeceworks is proud to announce its latest offering for Western enthusiasts, the Square Wool Underpad. Developed with input from extreme cowboy racing champion Robin Bond, the Fleeceworks 100% Merino Wool Underpad is designed so a Navajo blanket can be used over top, allowing for the custom look you want for competition, while providing your horse the thermal balancing advantages of Fleeceworks 100% Merino Wool. Fleeceworks Western pads even include removable viscoelastic inserts. Of course, Fleeceworks continues to be your go-to brand for the finest in wool accessories, from grooming mitts that bring out your horse's natural shine to halter and cribbing collar covers that look as beautiful as they fit. Ask for Fleeceworks products at your local tack and feed stores, or you can visit them online at fleeceworks.com.
You can also follow them on Facebook. Just search for Fleeceworks, and you'll find them on Facebook as well. Well, as I mentioned earlier in the show, or started to mention, there was a big race over the weekend with one of Jamie's favorite horses, and that was Wise Dan, who ran at Keeneland. And apparently they had a ton, this front that came across the country, they had a ton of rain at Keeneland, so they weren't using the turf course. and rather they ran on the synthetic or the poly track there, and they did a mile and 16th in the, let's see here, which race it was. I'm looking here. Let's see the name of the race. It was a $750,000 race, and they moved it to the poly track. And here is what happened with Wise Dan over the weekend. Of course, Wise Dan was Horse of the Year. He's reigning Horse of the Year right now, and was certainly up for another Horse of the Year title this year. So let's take a look.
And they're off in the Shadwell. Winning prize for the lead from the inside. Hoagie is there, and there goes Silver Max with his characteristic early speed, but on the poly track, of course, today, and up to challenge winning prize for that top spot. Silver Max goes second. Hoagie is third. Sky Ring is in fourth. Handsome Mike is fifth. Wise Dan, four wide and sixth, out in the center of the track. Four lengths off the early lead, and there goes Handsome Mike. Handsome Mike moves three lanes off the rail, up to challenge for the second spot. Wise Dan under a snug hold right behind Handsome Mike toward the outside. Sky Ring gets shuffled back two spots just to the inside of Summer Front. Gap of six more lengths to Colport. Wilcox in next to last, and Tour Lure, the trailer, 23 and 3/5 seconds for the opening quarter. Silver Max has made the lead over against the rail, leading Hoagie by just a half length. Wise Dan out in the center of the track is third ahead. Handsome Mike is fourth between horses. Winning prize, fifth toward the inside, three lengths off the lead. Sky Ring sixth, Summer Front seventh. Gap of five more lengths back to Colport eighth. Wilcox in is ninth, and Tour Lure, the gray, 10th and last. 46 and 3/5 seconds for the opening half mile. Silver Max, the leader by two lengths into the far turn. Wise Dan is there on the outside, second ahead. Hoagie drops back one spot in third toward the inside. Summer Front ridden along fourth. Still four lengths off the lead as they come toward the quarter pole. And Silver Max, the one to get, leads it by two lengths. Wise Dan still second on the outside. Hoagie is third. Top of the stretch, they move for the eighth pole. And Silver Max is shaken up now by Robbie Alvarado because he says the Horse of the Year is coming. And Wise Dan's going to have to find more. He's still two lengths away. Final furlong of the Shadwell. Silver Max taking it right to Wise Dan. Silver Max is a stubborn foe today. Silver Max has done it. He's won the Shadwell for Robbie Alvarado at the expense of Wise Dan.
Huh. Yeah, wow. Wise Dan lost. He actually lost the race, came in second. Now, you know, the jockey, John Velasco, has said he ran a good race. He just didn't have his A game today. It was his first time running on a poly track, and it was really wet, and he seemed like it was tiring for him. But he also said that Silver Max, who was 15-2, was really, really had it, and Silver Max led the race the whole way, looked terrific. So it was a heartbreaking loss for the current Horse of the Year.
Why is it that when a horse runs on a poly track, it's always the poly track's fault?
Yeah, they do seem to blame poly track a lot. I think it's convenient. But he did come back and say that, you know, Silver Max just had it today and Wise Dan didn't. So he didn't totally blame it on there. Wise Dan was running 2-1, or a 1-2 favorite, actually. He was 1-2.
Yeah.
So he was definitely the favorite. But they had had a ton of rain there, and they just couldn't use the turf course. If you ever get a chance and you head to Lexington, I know everybody heads to the horse park, but the other place you have to go, even if it's not a race day, you can just walk around and see it, is Keeneland. You have to see Keeneland when you go to Lexington. It's just a requirement because it's absolutely one of the most beautiful tracks ever. Definitely worth seeing. Well, our next guest is on the line. He stops by here once a month to help us out and help us understand nutrition and our horses. His name is Dr. Chang. He's president and founder of Omega Alpha Equine. Good morning, Dr. Chang.
Good morning, Glenn. How are you?
I am terrific. How are things up your way?
Well, it's raining today, but other than that, can't be better. Can't complain too much. It ain't snowing like South Dakota.
Yeah. Now, do you live in Canada? You live up there?
Oh, yeah. This is home. It ain't as cold as most people in the U.S. of it thinks of it. I don't think there was any snow in Canada for the weekend, but I looked at South Dakota and I'm saying to myself, thank God I don't live there.
Did you don't have polar bears in your backyard?
Not yet.
No.
with global warming, maybe they might want to migrate south for the good weather. Who knows?
So tell us, we're talking today about bone, joint, and ligaments, right?
Yes, we're talking about bone, joint, and ligament health as opposed to damage to bone, joint, and ligaments. Because
okay,
one
that's
of the,
what Jennifer has today from riding for 2 hours yesterday. She has damaged her bone joints.
Well,
that's
she told me. She told me she was limping and gimping, and I asked her, "What did you kick? Did you kick Glenn during the weekend or something like that?" I caught the damage. Yeah. Well, because one of the things I always like to bring up about bone joint and ligament health, nobody ever talks about the prevention side of things. Everybody sort of reacts after there's a sprained ligament or a joint that's out of whack or inflammation in the joint. They all jump at that point, but nobody looks at the other side of it, which I call prevention side. And the prevention side, whilst it's not a cure-all for everything, it will help with inhibiting the damage caused by overuse or by use. You know what I mean? Like, for example, if your horse, you could do prevention till the cows come home, but if your horse is going to step into a hole and not break anything and hopefully just strain something, all the prevention in the world isn't going to help that. However,
right.
Prevention will help. Like if you're a trail rider and you go on a long trail ride, for example, if you help build up the joints and the ligaments, etc., you won't have all of those joint issues as frequently or as bad as. You know what I mean? So this is prevention is good. Now, when people think of bone and joint, most of them just think glucosamine. Some people think chondroitin, right? And MSM. Those are the staples in everybody's back pocket type of thing, right?
Yeah, and those are the ones that everybody's been preached to. I mean, those are the commercials.
That's
and
right.
Everything you see, right?
Now, but I'm for horses, and I'm going to say this for horses. And horses only, chondroitin is it's just a waste of money because your horse is a vegetarian. Chondroitin normally comes from cartilage, so it'll come from bovine cartilage, which is usually a trachea, or you can get shark cartilage, or you get chicken cartilage, chondroitin, right? For a horse, it's useless. It's going in one end and it's coming out the other end because your horse doesn't have the enzymes to break it down, so it doesn't get absorbed. So if you're going to use chondroitin, use it for your dogs. For people, it's touch and go, right? But for horses, in my opinion, and if you look at the data out there, it is useless. Mind you, you have a lot of people swear on a stack of Bibles by it, okay? But glucosamine is a definitely must because one of the things it does provide a lot of raw material for help rebuilding the cartilage. But people don't even think of things like B vitamins. They don't think of things like minerals. When people think of minerals, they mainly think of calcium. They mainly think of magnesium. But they should also be thinking of things like zinc, copper, boron, silicon, right? Because all these minerals, whether you believe it or not, they help strengthen the bone. They help build up the what's called the bone matrix, right? They're also important in a lot of enzymatic activity, which is important for rebuilding some of this tissue, right? Especially the B vitamins. B vitamins are also very important in rebuilding tissue. So think of it in a more holistic fashion. You have to get your B vitamins, you got to get your minerals and so on into you so that you can actually help strengthen the bones from a nutrition point of view, okay? Again, on the prevention side of things, you have to exercise the animal to strengthen the bone, because how bone and so on gets strengthened, the more you use it, the stronger it becomes. That basically is breakdown and build up. Now, the more you use it, you also get inflammation, right? On a regular basis, if you help control that inflammation. Now, inflammation, you don't need to use something as strong as butanbanamine. Those are wonderful things if you have an acute inflammatory issue. But for day-to-day stuff, you don't need anything that strong. So, you can use something like our anti-inflam product, for example, or even go on our Sinuex product, which has the anti-inflammatory herbs in there. The nice thing about the herbs is that they're not tough on the stomach. Actually, they're very easy on the stomach. There's no problems with the stomach whatsoever for people who use that. As far as getting a nice mineral product, our Minerac product works really well because it has the B vitamins in there, and it has horse strength B vitamins. The biggest problem I've seen with a lot of B vitamin type products on the market for horses, if you look at how much is in there, the recommended dose, a lot of the times it's not even enough for people, much less for a horse. You see that size of a horse is about five times the size of a man. And if you look at the quantity, it's usually not enough, especially if your horse is exercising. If your horse is just basically walking around and being a backyard lawn ornament, you know, a lot of regular B vitamins is probably sufficient, but not for a performance horse.
Hmm. Now, what, like you mentioned the anti-flame product, what would you find, you know, what natural things are in that? What would you find in there?
Well, there's MSM, of course, right? And then there's a whole bunch of herbs. Now, we use, in our product, we tend to use a lot more of the Chinese herbs, right? And there's no common...
That's why I was asking, because I was looking at the list on your website, and I can't even say any of them.
That's right. And I don't want anybody to bite their tongue on it, but there is good data as to the efficacy of some of these herbs, right, as to how they work, et cetera. So that's why we put them in there, so we know they're efficacious. And the nice thing about this particular product, it's been out for over 10 years. We have lots of testimonials on it. We have a lot of people who have used it and have nothing but good things to say about it. You know, so it's not as though it's a brand spanking new thing that we're just telling people about, right? The herbs themselves have been used for thousands of years. So, you know, and the nice thing about what I say is tried and true, in the sense that if it didn't work, people would have stopped using it a long time ago as a herb, you know?
Right, right. And that's the thing about Chinese medicine, too, that with all of the different herbs, and there's so many that we don't realize. You know, when we think of herbs, we always think of the ones we cook with, right? That's what people think of, you know, but there's just tons of them. And I didn't realize that until I started hanging out with Wendy, that all of the different herbs that you can find everywhere, especially in Chinese medicine.
Yeah, there's a lot of, but even some of the herbs that we cook with have potent medicinal activity, right? You think of turmeric, for example. Turmeric is something that you know, that it gives the color, the yellow color to a lot of Indian curries.
Yep.
That stuff is powerful. It helps with inflammation, right? It's a powerful antioxidant, right? There's some good data on that. There's for people who are suffering from diabetes, type 2 diabetes, there's herbs like cinnamon has been shown to be very effective to help control that. There's people who use things like bitter melon. In Indian cuisine, it's called karaili, right? All of those things, you know, they're powerful. I mean, they're food and they're also medicinal value. There's a thin line between food and medicinal value.
Well, I was just going to say, too, because of the quantities used also, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in cooking, can you use enough herbs in a recipe? I know we're off topic here, but it's interesting. Can you use enough herbs in a recipe that it's actually going to be that beneficial? I always wondered about that when you hear it.
You probably can't use it in one sitting, but if you're doing it day in, day out, every meal, guaranteed you'll get enough. For example, if I was to cook curry for breakfast, curry for lunch, curry for dinner, right, and I have it 7 days a week, 365 a year, yes, I will have enough. The problem is...
If I did that, I wouldn't be allowed around other people.
Well, that's what I mean. The problem is nobody eats the same thing. Well, nobody eats the same thing every day. I know I wouldn't.
Right? Yeah.
You know what I mean? But this is what I love about the horses, too, because if you think about it, horses eat the hay, they eat the grain. It's the same thing every day.
Yeah,
and
they do eat
complain.
The same thing every day.
And they don't complain.
Now, I'm looking at the Sinewex product, which is spelled SINEW-X, and that does have your glucosamine and your MSM in it. That is closer to some of the ones that we have seen over the counter, let's say.
That is. But what's different between that and a lot of stuff that you've seen, it has the anti-inflammatory herbs, right? And is that anti-inflammatory herb? Because one of the things that but people don't realize about inflammation actually breaks down damaged tissue. But if you don't control that inflammation, it also breaks down healthy tissue. right? So that's why we put that little bit of anti-inflammatory in there. That's to help control that inflammation process. And because you can control the inflammation process, once that inflammation is controlled, the rebuilding is going will get the upper hand. Because what happens is that if any type of physical activity, let's say you're walking down the street, every time your muscle stretches and contracts, there's always what's called microfractures and micro tears. And these micro tears, how the body fixes them is that there's subclinical inflammation processes that basically clean up the damaged tissue, right? And then there's also cells that come in there and strengthen it by rebuilding and reconnecting the muscles, right? And every time they reconnect and rebuild, they build it stronger, right? However, sometimes the inflammation portion of it goes haywire. And when that happens, right, you see clinical signs of inflammation. So you see the swelling, you see the collection of fluid, et cetera, in there. And when that occurs, the inflammation process then goes haywire, and you get more damage and rebuilding, right? And you see that in the joints and so on. People don't usually think too much of the muscles and the ligaments, but the muscles and the ligaments have to be also strong, because if they're not strong, it's not only the joint. The muscle and the ligament is the things that actually pull, you know, are actually the things that,
right. You can't
that
have one
pull
without
the horses
other.
Around. That's right. It's
yeah.
a holistic approach. You got to look at it. I know that that's a tired old word that a lot of people hear about, holistic. But, you know, you ever remember the song, the foot bones connected to the leg bone
that
type of thing? People have to realize that. So the whole body works all in one. So if you don't think, I mean, the joints in itself doesn't exist on its own. You got to have the B vitamins, which will power the enzymatic processes, which will in turn power the rebuilding processes. And you got to have the minerals, which, because even if you had everything working well, if you didn't have the minerals, well, there's nothing to put into the bone to strengthen the bone. You know what I mean? And you got to have the protein. You got to have the protein coming in from the food, because if you all were feeding it was carbohydrates and there's no protein around, well, you know, even if the horses wanted to fix their muscles, there's no raw material for it to fix its muscles, right? So all of those things have to come into play. They have to work together, you know? And it's a very complex picture, so that's why a lot of people don't even think about it. They think of just one thing at a time. They say, joints, okay, glucosamine, we'll call it a day. You know, you can't. You have to have all those things together.
Thus, healthy joints, not damaged joints.
That's
there
right.
You go.
That's right. And, you know, it damage occurs from day-to-day action, but damage usually helps. If the repair mechanisms are working well, damage is not an issue, right? Because it's from day-to-day use. There's serious damage because of accidents, right? For example, if your horse steps into a gopher hole, for example, well, you know, I won't say this word on radio, but S happens, right?
Dr. Chang, do these products test?
Nothing. No, nothing. None of our products test.
Okay, so that's good to know.
Yeah.
Well, you can find these. These are Anti-Flam and Sinuex are the two we talked about today. And there's also Minarec.
Minarec.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Minarec is also more of a vitamin type of thing. But you can find them all at the website at omegaalphaequine.com. Their website is very simple and easy to use. You can also find it at a lot of retailers now in the United States, more and more every day, I think. So we appreciate you being on. It's always fun to have you on, and I'm going to go eat some curry now.
You better give some to Jennifer so she can use the other foot now to give you a kick. Well, thank you for having me.
Bye-bye. OmegaAlphaEquine.com. Also, don't forget to follow them on Facebook. They're over there as well. Well, we're going to take a break for our Question Collections product of the week and our song today. I thought we'd go with a little Shay with All Hands on Deck, one of our listeners. Hi, Shay. And I know that the Rigel Band has broken up now, but I still like their music. So I hope Shay's still playing the fiddle. She's an absolutely fabulous fiddle player. horse girl, and she's the one you're going to hear on this song, playing the fiddle. So we'll be right back in a few minutes. We have Leslie Wiley of Horse Nation with the Wacky World of Horses report. Hi, Glenn here with the Horse Radio Network, and I am here with Debbie from Equestrian Collections with her product of the week and a new product line that I absolutely love their products. I've tried several of them, Debbie, and I know the one you're going to talk about. I love Noble Equine stuff.
Yeah, this is a new vendor for us, and we are so happy to add them to the Equestrian Collections line. The featured product this week is the Noble Equine Just for Kicks Boot Bag, and it's the short. It's the boot bag short, and the reason I'm featuring this is because this is the first time that we have had on our site a boot bag specifically designed for Western boots. You don't have to get the tall boot bag to carry your Western boots around, and it's also designed for paddock boots. Inside this, if you're English and you need a place to carry your paddock boots, it's also got pockets on the inside for your half chaps. So you can carry your paddock boots and half chaps all in one container. And or you, if you're a Western rider, this boot bag is specifically designed for Western boots as well. So this is something we haven't had before, and we're now trying to, as you know, introduce some more Western lines. And this is something, this particular line is excellent, has great feedback. Everything is good about it. We have had just lots of good things to be said about Noble Equine. And this boot bag is kind of unique for us, so I wanted everybody to know and take a look at the Noble Equine Just for Kicks boot bag.
And I can say that their products are tough. I mean, I tested their backpack, which we'll talk about next month, and it just works. And they're tough. You can beat them up a little bit. It's just good stuff for horse people, Noble Equine. And you can search for all the Noble Equine products by going to equestriancollections.com and just searching Noble Equine.
We'll be right back.
Well, that was Shay and the Rigel Band, and that was that song. As I said, the group is no longer together, so I can't even tell you where to buy their music anymore, but I have it. It's called All Hands on Deck. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. Coach Jen is here as well, and we are hearing from we are sponsored today by Omega Alpha Equine. You can find them at OmegaAlphaEquine.com. Jamie is off today. She is visiting the in-laws in the middle part of the country. She'll be back on Wednesday. And next up here, we have Leslie Wiley of Horse Nation with the Wacky World of Horses Report. Good morning, Leslie.
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you, too. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am fine. And you had some good blog posts last week. I got to say that the one that Jamie was involved in had the most hits last week, huh?
It was all Jamie. It was so funny. Our pony shaming series, in which horse owners make little signs and hang them on their horses to shame them. That has been a big hit.
Yes, we talked about it on Friday here on the show, and Jamie was telling us about how some of those signs came about and why. That was a great idea.
Yes, yeah, hers were hilarious, and yes, very satisfying, because I think horses sometimes should be ashamed of themselves.
Now, this is off topic, but I've been good at that today. So when you do these posts, do you have any idea which – do you have an inkling which ones are really going to take off, or does it just surprise you every time?
I have no idea. It's so much fun, because I just never know what's going to resonate with people and what's, I think I have a sense of humor that doesn't quite is a little bit off. So some things that I think are really, really funny, other people, in various aspects of my life are like, no. And then some things that other people think are super hilarious, I'm like, what? So I'm never quite sure how our humor is going to line up with the rest of the world, but that's it's fun. It's part of the adventure.
Well, I know you post, actually, you're one of the very, very few blogs that actually posts how many views each entry gets. And, mm-hmm. So when you post, I look at your site every day, and when you post, I try and predict, because that's the marketer in me trying to predict which one. And pretty much you can say that the funny videos are going to do real well, and they do real well. Mm-hmm. But the sign thing, from last week that Jamie was involved in, I went, okay, that'll do okay. I predicted a couple thousand. I did not predict almost 10,000. it is amazing. Have you found it's all just what blows up on Facebook gets you to hit?
Exactly. It's all about, if it's good and it resonates with people, it just starts getting passed around like crazy. And that's kind of one of the neat things, I think, about doing this stuff in the social media age is the good stuff from anywhere kind of floats to the top, and it's going to, end up on your Facebook page, somewhere else. So that's pretty cool.
If you had, and there's a lot of people listening, I know, that are bloggers out there, and who are probably just starting up a blog or thinking about it. What would you tell them? You've been doing this now for a year and a half, two years?
I have, and before that, I had a personal blog that I just sort of started as a, just kind of keeping track of my day to day and how horse shows went, kind of like a journal, and that other folks could sort of check in on, and then it kind of gained traction. Different sites started linking to it, and got a fair amount of readers, and I think that's sort of how Eventing Nation noticed me and how it all got started. So.
Well, it's all right. I didn't know the story behind how John found you. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had an old blog.
So, So if you're starting, if you had to give somebody a piece of advice on starting a blog, and I'll have mine then too, but I want to hear yours first. What would you tell them is the most important thing to keep in mind when starting a blog?
I think, you know, just write it. I think a great rule for writing in general is write what you know. You know, if it's interesting to you, it'll be interesting to other people. And, you know, so I think if you go out automatically sort of thinking, oh, I'm writing to an audience, I'm writing to readers, like you're already sort of shooting yourself in the foot. But if you just, you know, take the approach of, I would like to hear something that I would like to know about or read about, then your stuff's going to be great. So I think that's a good tip.
Very good tip. And looking at the different entries you have from last week on Horse Nation, if you're writing what you know about, you have a very strange mind, just say.
I do.
Now, what I would say is two things, actually. One of the things is it's going to take a while to catch on. You've got to stick with it. And, you know, you had the advantage with Horse Nation. You didn't have this with your personal blog, but I didn't have it when I started Horse Radio Network. You had the advantage that you were piggybacking off of Eventing Nation. So, you had a built-in amount of or readers that were going to come over because of the promotions on Eventing Nation. So let's give you that. But still, it was a slow start. It was still a slow start. If you went back and looked at those early entries that you did way back when you first started, they weren't getting near the numbers that you're getting now, even with Eventing Nation's help. So, thing I would say is you have to do it. You have to keep blogging. You have to keep writing the articles. The thing that kills the blog is the biggest thing that kills a blog or a podcast is lack of activity. If you're not posting 2 to 3 times a week and you don't plan on posting 2 to 3 times a week on a blog, don't bother starting it. Wouldn't you say that's a good rule of thumb?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That keeps people kind of checking back. You know, I didn't know my favorite blogs. I'm constantly checking on them to see, you know, what's new, what's been posted. And if you keep going back and back and back and nothing's new, then you sort of lose your interest. You kind of forget about it. So I think that's very true.
Is there a limit? I know there's also people that go to the other extreme and post too much in one day. Do you kind of have a limit in mind of the number of posts you can get away with in a day?
We've kind of gone back and forth on that. I know we've had periods where we were posting like, you know, 10 or 12 posts a day. And now we've kind of reined that in because it felt like I was sort of just throwing a lot of stuff against the wall and see what stuck. And now we're sort of taking the mindset that if we post something, it's going to be good, you know. So it's not just like, you know, so if you click on a Horse Nation link, like, you know, it's going to be worth reading and not like something that you click and you're like, that's, you know, 45 seconds of my life I'll never get back. Thanks, Horse Nation. Although we do, that still happens quite a bit, I'm sure.
Well, one of the ones that I found absolutely fascinating, maybe it's because I'm a driver that I found this fascinating, last week was the article on the ancient carriage horses that were found in Bulgaria. And these are 2,500-year-old remains of carriage horses. And the fascinating part about this, you're going to tell us about.
I knew you would like this story because you're kind of.
Oh, I love this story. And Jennifer probably did too. She's really into archaeology. This is just fascinating stuff.
It is. It is. It's these Bulgarian archaeologists unearthed 2,500-year-old. Remains of a, what do you say, Thracian carriage and two horses. Thracian. but the weird thing is, they appear to have been buried standing up. So what happened was, they think they sort of dug these sort of little narrow holes with sloping sides, and they'd have the horse pull the carriage pull the carriage into their grave, and then they would kill the horse. I think back in the olden days, you know, I think burial traditions were maybe a little bit unorthodox compared to today, you know, they would bury all kinds of things with people, crazy stuff. I think we did a story a while back about the China's first emperor, Qinshi Huangdi, who built himself this city-sized mausoleum, and had it that had like 8,000 soldier statues and 130 chariots and 500 and something horses and all this stuff. You know, basically built himself a city to be buried in. You know, because they sort of believed that you could take it with you. I think that, you know, these horses that they found in Bulgaria, I think that was probably they felt like they were honoring the horses, you know.
I'll tell you what, it is interesting when you see, because they were definitely buried standing up, and you can see how they were killed actually too, because there's holes right in the top of their forehead. You can definitely see what they probably did to kill the horses there, but it's just amazing that they found these. It's probably one of the first cases of that. And then there was also in the article you mentioned that they found horses at the highest place they've ever been found so far, and that was 6,500 feet up in the Norwegian mountains. And they apparently, they think, dropped dead while carrying reindeer carcasses over the mountains during the Iron Age. I mean, that's stuff you don't think about, you know. But somebody, you know, those horses were used as pack animals back then, and that's how you got stuff from point A to point B.
Right, right. Yeah, and I bet those were really well preserved, too, because being high up and colder.
And then the last part of this article I found fascinating, too, was you mentioned Caligula, which is not usually mentioned in a horse article, that's for sure. Caligula, of course, was one of the most vicious, cruel, weirdest emperors in Rome. And, and you know, you had found out that he loved his horse. His horse name was Insatius, something like that. And he had a marble stall, an ivory manger, a jeweled collar, and fed him oats mixed with gold flakes. I'm assuming he died of some kind of metal poisoning, probably. But
oh, goodness.
So Caligula was really into his horses as well. And as a matter of fact, he planned on having him appointed to the government as the Council of Rome, but he was assassinated before he had the chance. I thought that was funny, too.
That's somebody who really loves their horse.
Yeah, he was a nut job. The other one that was interesting, too, and I saw this article in a couple of different places, is about the horse population in decline around the world.
Yeah, it's declining around the world. I think it's seen a drop of about 1 million horses a year the last 3 years. And it's dropping everywhere except for, looks like the United States. Our horse population is actually increasing. Sort of assume this, but I was glad to have it confirmed that the U.S. actually has the world's largest equine population, and it's about 30 one horse to every 30 people of the U.S. population, which I thought was really interesting, and is a lot, right? You know, it's no wonder we have a overpopulation problem and so many unwanted horses. But elsewhere in the world, the horse population is decreasing,
I thought China would have led the way with horses, to be honest with you, just because of the size of the company and our country and the number of people.
Right. Yeah. I guess not. Yeah, because they have those, I would agree with that too, but I guess they don't. I thought that was really interesting. And I wonder why that is. I wonder if it has something to do with just like better breeding regulation elsewhere. You know, they're gelding more horses, or
it's got to do with leisure time.
Just
It's all about time.
Yeah.
Really?
We need more of it.
Yeah. They're pets.
Right.
We're lazier. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. We have more time on our hands, probably. I mean, I'd say that, you know, horses in some other places, I mean, historically, they've served more function, more workman-like functions than just jumping over fences and, you know, trotting around in rings. So they may still have a more utilitarian function elsewhere in the world, too. But, yeah, definitely interesting statistics.
Well, you can find all of the articles over at Horse Nation, and horsenation.com is where you can find them. Leslie is busy over there, as she said, every day posting stuff. So check it out. Thank you, Leslie. Appreciate you being on again. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, it's been a long time, Jennifer, since we did the real estate roundup, and where we talked about some of the you know, more expensive properties that are for sale in case you're in the market. But I have three of them for you. I wanted to run down really quickly if I could. There's a grand equestrian estate.
Go for it.
Yeah, well, some of these places, oh my gosh, if you look at the pictures. There's a grand equestrian estate up for auction in Greenwich, Connecticut. Greenwich, Connecticut, of course, right outside of New York City, where the wealthy live. Well, this auction is a 20-acre equestrian estate with a very, very large mansion. It is going up online auction from October 15th to the 17th. It has a starting build of only $1 million. And you say, only $1 million? Well, they had it originally up for sale for $28 million. So I would say, yeah, $1 million is a pretty good starting bid on that. It has a 15,000-square-foot home, an equestrian facility comprised of two large stables that can hold up to 30 horses, and a polo field. There are nine bedrooms. I know, and you have your own polo field. There, and you know what? All you horse riders always want to ride across the golf course and the polo field. You always want to gallop on the golf course and the polo field. Here, you can buy your own. There are nine bedrooms, 17 baths, a guest suite, a home theater, a library, exercise room, and several playrooms. It also features a heated pool, spa, and a tennis court. So it has something for everybody. Now, you could have gone look at it last Saturday. They had an open house. But to go look at it, you had to put down a $25,000 deposit and proof of funds enough to buy the place. So you can't even go out and look at it unless you have money.
It's like going to Sam's Club. You have to pay to get in and look around.
Yes, you have to pay your admission. $25,000, please, and you can go look at our property. Yeah, they don't want the riffraff there. They don't want us there just looking at the pretty house. The next one, in case you're interested, they're all in the north this month. The next one, in case you're interested, is in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And, you know, it gets chilly there in winter, so I will just throw that out there. But you can find yourself a nice, very pretty house. It's a 120-acre retreat. It has a trout stream, so if you're into fishing, you got that too. The house is very, I don't know, what would you say, Jennifer? It's very, stone. It's a big stone house with lots of nooks and crannies.
The big stone McMansion. I would definitely label that McMansion.
Yes, it is definitely a McMansion. And it has six bedrooms, 5.5 baths, a total of 8,500 square feet, so it's tiny compared to the other ones. Viking kitchen. It has radiant heat throughout the house in the floors. I like that. Stone baths, which is really cool. Outdoor kitchen and over 1,500 square foot of outdoor living space on the patio. It also has a 10-stall horse stable, a large barn, and a large medical office building. Not exactly sure what that means. Not sure why that's there. But I don't know if the medical office building is for people or for animals. I don't know what the medical office building is, but it probably comes with lots of cool equipment. All for $2.7 million close to Green Bay. And it does have access to like a half a mile of this trout stream. So,
I want the laundry room. Did you see the laundry room?
Yes. I mean, the laundry room is like something out of a sci-fi novel. I mean, it's huge. It's a beautiful house. Inside
they don't have
and out.
A single picture of the barn.
No, I didn't see any pictures of the barns on that one. And Jennifer, maybe you could post links to these then on our Facebook page so people can check them out. The third one is a beautiful house. It's a wood house structure, wood and stone, and it's very unusual looking, and it is actually in British Columbia, so it's in Canada. And it is a, they say majestic, that's true. I mean, this is a majestic, probably has a hell of a view. And it's a 6,700 square foot home, and it goes through who all the architects are, but it sits on 83 acres. It has a 2-acre vineyard that is planted to several different kinds of grapes. It has a 1 acres that are planted to grow hops, and that they sell to a local brewery to make beer. You know, I have never seen a property before that has a hops orchard or a whatever you call it. And how do hops grow? Are they on, you know, are they some kind of plant? Are they growing to the ground? I don't know how hops grow.
They're a plant. Like I think the hops that they use are the flowery part.
Yeah, okay. Yep, they just take it in like they do grain, I think. So it has a 7-acre, fully irrigated 7-acre horse pasture, a small paddock, and a 36-by-36 barn. The home consists of top-of-the-line everything. It has an entertainment area with a full theater, a wet bar, a sunken wine cellar on the lower level, which opens to the pool deck. If you see pictures of this wine cellar, you could probably hold about 2,000 bottles of wine. It is huge and absolutely gorgeous, and they have it set up so that you can have dinner in the wine cellar. It has a huge fireplace, its centerpiece and living room, and it just has top-of-the-line everything. I mean, this is really a luxurious place. It has 2 5-burner propane stoves in the kitchen so that 2 cooks can cook at the same time. So you know what they say about 2 cooks in the kitchen? Well, it doesn't apply to this house. You know, it's just...
Isn't her kitchen.
It is a beautiful place with, I'm sure, spectacular views. And Jennifer will post, they didn't have the price on that one, by the way, but I can't imagine it. It's probably only $4 or $5 million.
Oh, here, $2.999999 million.
Oh, that's affordable. A little under $3 million. There you go. You probably need $25,000 to go look at that one, too.
Right.
But that's in British Columbia, so all over the Northeast, there are some great horse properties for sale. Get out your checkbooks and head on out. Now a couple of the bizarre stories from the weekend, Jennifer. You have one of them, and I have one of them. And I had can't tell you how many people sent this one to me, and I'm trying to find it in the show notes here. What it was is, let's see, a Danish artist in Denmark had made this very large pink model pony. Does that sound familiar?
It's a My Little Pony statue.
Yeah, a very large My Little Pony statue, correct. And so I guess you could call this guy a great big brony because he was really into making My Little Pony statues. Well, this was a very large one that was on display in the public park. Well, it went missing a couple of nights ago. Somebody stole it at about 2 a.m. So he decided that he was going to file a police report, but he was going to find his My Little Pony statue. And he started going around to all the neighbors and talking to everybody and finally came across somebody who said, oh, yeah, I saw somebody walking out with it at 2 a.m. from the park. And he actually went over to where they thought this guy lived, knocked on his apartment door. Keep that in mind. It's a 6 or 8 foot statue. Knocked on his apartment door, and the guy confessed and said, yep, the thief said, I took it. I did it. And he said it was fun. He said that apparently he was very drunk and when he did it and when he took the statue. And he blamed it on being drunk. And he actually took it because he wanted to give it to his girlfriend as a present. So he had a good cause for taking it. The artist said, you know, that's romantic, but I still want my statue back. So he got his statue back, and the thief said, you know, it was fun, but the hangover the next morning was not. So he actually had it in his apartment, this huge pony statue. So apparently that's how they deal with thieves in Denmark. It's very nice they go up and ask for their stuff to be returned.
So and you know what? And then the thief gives it back. That's how they deal with it. Yeah. Thieves
are
so polite
back, apparently. In Denmark. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Well, he's sober then. He also said that he is looking for a new home for the pony because apparently the park is not a great place to keep your unmounted My Little Pony statue that's 8 feet tall. You had one about a bizarre castration.
Let me do. I, and I got to find all the details here on my show notes. There you go. Oh, there it is. It was above the things that we'll never own. In Iron County, which I don't know what state it is, it's out in the Midwest somewhere. This is the headline: Iron County men accused of castrating neighbor's stallion. Now, if we had really bad headlines instead of really bad ads,
that would be it. Yes. It's Utah, by the way. Utah.
Apparently, we have two groups of cattle ranchers / horse owners, both of whom are using the same 10,000-acre swath of land. Now, we have two small herds of horses and 10,000 acres. Well, apparently, group one of horses, herd number one, has a bunch of horses and a stallion, and herd number two has a bunch of horses and a stallion, and they've been mixing it up a little bit. And the first group of people who owns herd one is really pissed off because they keep getting colorful foals from the other guy's stallion, and they're not happy about it.
Funny what will happen with horses.
Yeah, it's funny how that happens. So they got really cranky about it, and they went out there and they roped the landowner's stallion. These are the guys that are unhappy, or the renters. They were unhappy. They went out and roped the other guy's stallion and gelded them.
Oh, well, that won't happen again. The thing I thought was interesting in the article is they said that they noticed it when the mares did not foal on their usual schedule. So it took them a while to notice that the stallion was not – they don't spend much time, I guess, with these horses. They're more like wild horses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why do they have all these horses running around on the range making babies? Really?
I don't know.
I don't get it.
I don't know. But it took them, almost a year, I guess, to notice that this stallion wasn't a stallion anymore. Well, that's the bizarre stories we have for you from today. We're just going to end on that. We'll be back here tomorrow morning, don't forget, with the monthly Endurance Day with Karen Chatton. We have guests from 9 to 90 on tomorrow morning. Yes, we have a 9-year-old guest and an 89-year-old guest on tomorrow, both endurance riders, and also Karen has some training tips and that kind of thing planned for you. And we'll be back here at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning here on Horses in the Morning. Well, Jennifer, say goodbye to everybody. Thank you for filling in for Jamie today.
Goodbye, everybody.
Don't forget you can get our app. Go to the App Store at iOS or Android and just search for Horse Radio Network. You can listen to all our shows on the app. We'll see everybody. Have a safe day. Talk to you tomorrow morning. Be riding distances tomorrow.